This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
Tommy Greenwell, here we are at Greenwell Farms on the Big Island of Hawaii.
Welcome.
Your family story is so fascinating. It was your great-grandfather? So this guy, from England somewhere in the British Army, goes over during the famine times in Ireland.
And he was only about 21 years old.
And then he decides to go to the gold fields in California.
Well, his first dream was to find a sheep ranch in Australia. And then he heard about the gold rush. And, you know, he just found the opportunity there to, I think he was going to supply equipment for mining. Mm-hmm. And that's what took him to San Francisco in 1849.
So then the journey continues, right? And it wasn't direct to Hawaii.
No, and so when he arrived there, they had to unload the ship, and he slipped and cut himself with a rusty nail and got tetanus. And they told him he had to come to Hawaii because that was the closest doctor that was worth, I guess, you know, all the doctors were looking for gold in California. And he fell in love with Hawaii and ended up here on this property that we're sitting right now.
What a fascinating story, you know, just, I mean, the logistics. Oh, let's go over to Hawaii. Big journey just to get from A to B.
And think about it, you're on a sailing boat that it was amazing they could even float. But, you know, that's how they traveled, and it wasn't 6 hours from the mainland to Hawaii. It was.
And so he did oranges and other crops and somehow stumbled on a good variety of coffee, right?
Yeah, you know, he was a good Englishman. He was going to plant citrus. He found this property and he did plant it in citrus. But also on the property was coffee, and that started his journey in the coffee world.
But back in the, what, 1860s? Is that what time that was?
Well, that was, he arrived here in Kona in 1850.
So there were, a lot of people don't realize, already for, what, 30 years, coffee plantations on the island in Hawaii.
Yeah, King Kamehameha told everybody, plant coffee and pay your taxes in coffee. Mm-hmm. And by the time he came along, they made it possible for foreigners to purchase land. And he, I think, spent his last dime every, you know, on land whenever he could buy it. But most of it was coffee land. And that's what start, you know, really got him in the coffee industry and exporting coffee.
My reading of your history is, to be blunt, the coffee kind of sucked here at the time. And he knew that. So he went in search of different varietals.
Yeah, he traveled all over the world. And, you know, I think more so than different varietals was the varietals, but also was processing, keeping it separated from the coffee that fell on the ground, separated from the coffee they picked off the tree ripe and dried, and separate from the coffee that dried on the trees that were picked.
That was probably the biggest game changer then.
Yeah, because
and that's the same that's true today for you.
It sure is, you know. I mean, we separated from picking it in the mill, processing, now varieties. We're having a lot of fun with varieties. But
even in the picking process today, you have to keep an eye on your pickers, because they're getting paid piece rate. You've got to make sure you're getting the red guys.
Yeah, no, you know, what comes off the tree is what's going in the cup. So you start with harvesting ripe coffee.
But there's an incentive in the negative side of a guy to just keep throwing beans in without really doing a real good sourcing.
Yeah. You know, anytime a crop or, you know, anything becomes very valuable, the demand, you start to have, you know, you go for volume, not quality, and it always ends up hurting, well, you know, no matter what it is. And we see that here in the industry, in the coffee industry, but, you know, we work really hard just to keep the quality up.
So that's number one for you.
Yes.
And then you have a varietal that you're working on and developing right now that you have proprietary rights to, correct?
Yeah, back in the late 1990s, this project was started with a bunch of coffee growers statewide, and we wanted to create the Hawaiian variety. very interesting results. There's actually probably a lot of different varieties that will come out of this one day. But what are we now, 20 some odd years later, our first variety that's come from this venture that started in, I think it was like 97. And then 99, we brought, or 2000, we brought Coffee Tucona from this breeding program. So we're just doing a lot of crosses for different reasons. And planted it here, and I entered it in a contest. I had 6 trees, and it won the contest. And I went, wow, we do have something. So today, we're actually going through the final step of selecting the final plant from this variety. And it will be, six generations of growing.
Is that variety available retail now? Is it in your shop?
Yeah, very limited quantity.
And it's called?
It's called Mamo. It's an abbreviation of the parents. Maro Gujipe is the mother, and Mocha is the father. So M-A-M-O, Mamo, which also means, which was real interesting, in Hawaiian, Mamo means descendant. So it's kind of like, carry on the descendants here.
That's really fascinating. I think going back to square one is the delineation and definition of Kona coffee. As some people in the industry have told me, the volume, the numbers worldwide that are labeled Kona greatly exceed the total production of Kona coffee on the island. So there's a huge disconnect.
Big disconnect. And it gets, comes back to that greed, right? We know there's 10 times more Kona being sold on the market than is produced in Kona. This is true just in the 100%. So.
But the same thing could be said for Jamaican Blue Mountain.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's the real authenticated Blue Mountain, and then there's all these bags out there all around the world. So it really is a buyer beware. How does a consumer know what they're truly getting?
Well, number one is come visit the farms and buy direct, but that's not always as practical as it sounds. You got to know price. You're not going to find 100% cheap Kona coffee.
It's not going to happen.
It's just not going to happen. No, it's very expensive to grow coffee in Hawaii.
So no matter what the variety, it's an expensive process, and one of the huge variables, which I'm sure, is your labor cost.
Minimum wage does not count in Hawaii. And there's, our unemployment rates are so low that there's no way. Minimum wage, for picking coffee is probably $16 a pound. To get quality pickers today, we're talking $1 a pound already. You hear some people pay more than that to pick their coffee.
Interesting.
To make that clear, it's $1 a pound on your cherry.
Right.
Now,
that's at the front end.
Right. It's about a 7-to-1 ratio just to a roasted product. And if everything is good, not counting the time and effort and milling and processing and shipping and farming.
So you are not the largest grower on the island by choice?
Yeah, no, we are, by far we're not the largest grower, but I like to think we're the best. Aren't we all? Have you ever met a farmer that wasn't the best?
But you do some management for other growers, right?
Yeah, we took on for knowing a lot of the farmers in Kona just getting too old to farm, and they deserve a break. So we started a management program trying to keep their farms intact. And so we do that, and we have joint ventures with other cousins that have property that we put coffee in. So it's kind of fun keeping it in the family.
There are different branches of the family descendants. I know I was at an event in a park, and it was, Amy Greenwell, a botanical park?
Right. Yeah.
What's the connection there?
Well, Amy Greenwell would I'd call her Aunt Amy, but I was always told she's Cousin Amy. Her and my dad would have been first cousins. There's kind of three major Greenwell lines in Kona right now.
Back to Kona coffee. What is it? You know, how is it different? Why is it distinctive?
I think when you come down to it, last night we were tasting a lot of different varieties. And even though it's not the variety so much as just the Kona climate. We're a microclimate in the state of Hawaii, and then we have microclimates in Kona.
And your volcanic soil would be real essential, correct?
Well, yeah, because it's a very, the soil, you know, a lot of people say it's a, you know, virgin, rich soil. Well, actually, it's not. Actually, it's perfect soil to grow coffee in because it drains well. But it's very organic. You know, it's not very old. So it's what the coffee tree likes to live in. It's, you know, it's our environment, I would say, is more so to the beauty of Kona coffee. And we have these nice sunny mornings. Usually by lunch, you know, around noon or so, we start to cloud up. We have cool evenings. And if you do take care of your farm, you know, the organic matter will feed the plant.
Right now, just looking down at the seashore, we're way over 1,000 feet elevation, correct?
We're actually at 1,500 feet.
1,500, yeah. So point being, what is that sweet spot?
You know, back in the day, call it the coffee belt. And the coffee belt was basically a belt along the main highway. And the main highway is around 1,500 feet. And either side of the road is for the farms. Today, some of the farms are extending up into higher elevations. If you think about it, over here on this slope of Mauna Loa, we'll get frost at 4,000 feet elevation. So we can't grow at those high elevations as they talk about in Central America. We're also very, you know, we're at what, 19 and 20 our latitude, right, away from the equator. So it gets cooler. So your lower elevation in Kona is as good as 3,000 feet elevation Central America to grow coffee. What you need is moisture. Like I always say, you know, rain makes coffee. And we have steady rainfall year-round. Our dry season is actually during the winter months, which lines perfectly up for flowering for the coffee trees and creating the next year's crop.
Can you dry farm or do you have to do irrigation too?
We basically strictly are dry farming. I rely on Mother Nature. Every day I wake up, I pray for rain. Even in a rainstorm, I pray for rain because a drought's worse than a flood, I've always said. Yeah, so, and we get rain. I mean, you know, even in the dry periods, it just tends to kind of, we don't dry up and blow away so far.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about your sales and retail. You have a tours that you do here daily almost, and a little retail cottage.
Yeah, we do coffee tours here. We call it farm tours. We started that back in the mid-90s. No advertisement, you know, we sold a few pounds of coffee. It looked pretty good, and slowly we put a sign on the road one day, and then I had to hire someone to give the tours. Yeah, so today it's 7 days a week. 8:30 to 5 o'clock. Tours are pretty much on the hour. We do have tours that you can, you know, special tours if you want to have a group of people come in. We do have a small store. It's made out of our old farm wagon. It's kind of evolved. You know, there's no chrome or glass in the area, but there's a lot of smells. And, you know, it's a farm. You get to pick oranges, and we have avocados and a lot of fruit also.
It follows that just from a business model that your direct-to-consumer retail sales right here at the farm would be the no-brainer way to go.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. It's kind of, you know, they come, they try it. We offer the best coffee we possibly can.
Do you have retail distribution on the mainland and whatnot, or is everything pretty direct?
No, everything's direct. It's here at the farm or our internet, you know, our website.
Smart.
Yeah. You know, we try and keep the cost reasonable. And if you start going in retail store, then your cost of your product's going to be a lot higher.
So we talked earlier about you doing farm management for other people's property. Do you harvest and process and put those into your collection too, or not necessarily so?
Some of them we are. We have an Onole estate that is one of our managed farms. Right now we just, our first harvest off of a Copico estate, which is our 2,800 foot elevation farm. We're developing that with our cousins, the Claps, and that will soon have its own label. We have a few varietals that are labeled, but probably our largest sales is coffee we purchased from a couple hundred farmers in Kona, and we proudly represent that as Greenville Farms 100% Kona, but it's basically, it's a blend of Kona from all these old farms, 100-year-old trees, a lot of them.
Very cool.
Is the Greenwell family the patriarchs of Kona coffee, or was your family the first in the kind of new generation of growers on the island?
Yeah, in 1985 when we started, you know, we thought we're getting in the coffee business, right? We were going to grow it, the machine harvest it. We saw the future back then that, you know, hand labor is always going to be, you know, a problem. Everybody thought we were crazy. I think we were. But we mechanized, and it started a whole new style of growing coffee in Kona. And it was so interesting that some of the outer islands even picked it up and, you know, took the sugar cane out and put coffee in.
Looking forward, what's your vision and prognosis for the industry in the Hawaiian Islands and Kona?
I think our biggest challenge coming forward is going to be harvesting coffee.
So it's labor.
It's labor. Yeah. We've done pretty good to take a lot of labor out of the field on a daily basis. Now we have to figure out how to take the picking into then, you know, using the technology that's available to us today.
So going forward, artificial intelligence of the mechanized harvesting is happening now, where it can sense the color of the beans, correct?
Yeah. You know, we have a couple optic sorters, and they've given me a lot of ideas. And, you know, obviously what we want to do is every bean ripen on the tree. I mean, we could go out there, strip the tree, and separate it by color and have beautiful coffee for sale. But I don't think that's going to be very economical here. So, yeah, I think, you know, I think we'll be seeing state-of-the-art harvesting machines in the next 10 years. You know, they're doing it with raspberries and strawberries, and why not with coffee?
Out of necessity.
Yeah, it's out of necessity.
Tommy Greenwell, thanks for sharing. What a great morning in paradise.
Thank you. Enjoy it.
My pleasure. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Greenwell Farms, where we've been visiting with Tommy Greenwell. We'll see you here.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
Associate producers include Rebecca Nolan, Newfoundland, Canada, Molly Blaisdell, San Francisco, and Katya Singel, San Luis Obispo, California.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org.